Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and here is another day where your jonesing for the news cycle will have to be put off. That I'm not trying to put off the news cycle. What I'm actually trying to do is I'm trying to put on the changing of the narrative and the direction of this country. If you understand the problems we're facing, it doesn't matter whether it's, again, the POTUS, Congress, it doesn't even matter the mass shootings. Everything we are dealing with, almost every problem, almost every repugnant thing that is occurring on a day-to-day basis has something to do with unconstitutional government. I've gone through this several times regarding shootings, whether it be a school shooting, mass shooting, it doesn't matter. We have debased our society, and the culprit is our education system. We have removed morality, and we have tried to substitute that with you know, 2 + 2 = 5. Any answer is okay. However you feel is validated. The space outside the hoop is just as valid as the space inside. And that kind of crap creates, or I should say, that type of education and the crap that they're feeding our kids creates the environment and actually moves our society towards debasement. When we're focused on our own individual gratification and what's in it for me, we've become a society of nothing but whiffums, what's in it for me. And I'm telling you that with the enabling of bad behavior and so forth, it's not going to get any better. So we have to focus on the real, I'll just call them the real facts that we need to take a stand on. If we don't take a stand on the facts, and those facts are constitutional, you got to understand this. What we're doing by going through the ratification debates are constitutional definitions and terms that were provided as the Constitution was being accepted. That's why these things are legally binding. When you go through the negotiations of a contract and somebody tells you that this is what this means, the interesting thing is that the things that were stated may have been stated by people to people, but these people represented a perpetual entity, which means that however they were defined, those definitions continue to exist as long as those entities exist. And near as I can tell, we have not had, you know, states just go away and a new state form. We've not had those types of revolutions or civil wars in the states, that they've adopted some new type of constitution for themselves as well as for what they believe the republic. What we have today, my friends, is a bunch of individual sovereign entities that have bought into the contract. Now, got to remember that only the first 13 states had the opportunity of ratifying this, but every state that came to the table afterwards fell under the equal and exact same terms and definitions of this contract. And so when people say, well, Texas didn't, Texas had, the Constitution provides no allowance for a one state to be treated differently than another. Texas isn't unique. All states can walk away from their obligations if the contract is being violated, and it's being severely violated. The fact is, we do not want the states to secede. What we want is the states to obtain control and force compliance upon their subcontractor or the federal government. So, as you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that actually prize open these archives and these factoids of the Constitution that you will find in the ratification debates. Anybody that is espousing and leans upon the Federalist Papers, anybody that leans upon the Federalist Papers and supporting their argument, there's a lot of people. You go watch it, and if you hear somebody talking about Federalist Papers, Federalist Papers, Federalist Papers, they're just providing insights. They have no legal standing in what they're saying. Anybody that says, oh, well, this is what this means, and well, no, that's an insight. That is why the ratification debates is 180 from the Federalist Papers, and that's because the ratification debates are what was being stated in the acceptance of the contract. The Federalist Papers was just a bunch of insights, and they aligned a lot with the ratification debates, but the ratification debates do not hold water. They're just articles that went into the newspaper. They really had no direct persuasion in swaying a state into accepting the Constitution. Again, very insightful, written by three men. But I'm here to tell you that they're useless other than for insight. The most important documents we have, our greatest treasure, are our ratification debates, because these are the legal definitions. So the listen number, if you cannot stream this entire show at any point in time, or when you know you're not going to be able to get online to listen, you can dial up 605-562-4209, and that is how you can actually listen to this entire show on our listen line. We have two lines. The first one, again, is 605-562-4209. And the second one is 605-313-0599. Now, again, there's all sorts of crap that's going to be happening in the news cycle between now and then. And I told you months ago that Circus Maximus has begun, that what I will call the grand facade of the Democrats trying to take these positions, and you know, we're going to have all sorts of great sound bites where they say, you know, very dangerous things. What we have to focus on is the elections in the states, because if we don't get the people to stand up in the states to actually defend and demand compliance to the Constitution, the tyranny is going to continue to reign upon us, and the reach and the breadth of this federal tyranny is only going to get worse. What gives you any inkling that it's going to get better? Oh, well, Trump's our guy, and he's in there, and he's going to do that for us. I'm sorry, but he is not. He has no power to do this. He cannot constitutionally create a department or take down a department. He can actually do it, but it's not constitutional. It is not a permanent action until the states actually stand up and demand compliance. That's why we continually ebb and flow. And I'll be honest with you, there's not a lot of ebb. It's more flow, because we seem to be flowing in one direction of growing government's reach. We have such an immense standing army watching over us and forcing their unconstitutional laws upon us. The states need to get into the game. If they don't get into this game, then we're hosed. So I'm here to tell you that it is not a coincidence that these documents of the ratification debates were actually documented and written and preserved. The problem was that they were never maintained, and they were never kept in the light of day so that people could say, wow, this is not what they're talking about. This actually says that the federal government has to amend the Constitution if they are going to do anything different. And instead, we've been hoodwinked, we've been deceived, and we've been lied to by the courts, by lawyers, by bureaucrats, by politicians, by a plethora of folks, people who have had the designs, machinations, avarice, greed, whatever you want to call it. That is why we're in this pickle. And I'm here to tell you that the fact that these things are coming forth today or in these past few years because of the advent of the internet has been truly a blessing. It is the divine hand of providence that made sure that we had these documents available to us. Most people didn't even realize that what they were unleashing. And I'm here to tell you that when the University of Wisconsin in 1976 started going down the documentation history of the ratification of the Constitution, I think that they realized what they were doing as they started pulling these things out of the, you know, out of storage boxes and what have you, out of archives. And they go, oh my gosh, you know, we're not even following this the way they're describing this. We need to downplay this so that most people don't, you know, wise up and they realize how far off we are from the way the contract is supposed to be executed. Well, let me just move on real quick. I want to get you involved. I'm trying, and the whole point of going through these ratification dates and providing you all these different insights, and there is a lot of duplication in how people are constantly saying the exact same thing. There is nothing but harmony. This is a very synchronized and harmonious set of documents that actually puts perspective on a hard, defined, limited constitutional government, or I should say a federal government or a general government. With that, we're at a hard break. So when we come back, we're going to dive into the Virginia ratification debate. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
So before we get on with the dialogue or dive into the Virginia debates, let's first talk about supporting the solution. Obviously, you know we need your help. Obviously, you know that this is, if you want to call it a revolution, if you want to call it a paradigm shift, it takes resources to do that. And so what we're trying to do is get you motivated, get you involved. Hopefully all of the facts as we lay them out and have been laying them out will help motivate you, because there's nothing better than standing on the truth. There are ways you can support this solution. First off, if you drink coffee, if you buy Red State Coffee, that goes to funding the stuff. I mean, for the most part, we're looking for traveling and getting the word out to specific states, and it costs money to do that. We've already traveled twice, got to travel again this coming month in August. And so getting some support, and one of the better ways of doing that is so you get something for it, especially if you drink coffee. It may be a little more expensive than you're used to paying, but I'm just here to tell you that it's sweet when you're actually involved in helping something. And as a matter of fact, as we ask you, if you try the coffee, call us up and let us know what you think. Give us a short quip, 15 seconds or, you know, 10 seconds. I love the coffee. It's the best tasting coffee I've ever had. Or it has a bitterness that acquires a taste. Whatever. We would be happy to have your input. And so that's one way you can support us. Another way you can support us is directly with our crowdfunding on GoFundMe. And then another way you can support us is directly by you actually getting involved, sending us a letter, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and get involved. There's no reason why you can't start leading on this solution and on these issues, primarily these issues being compliance to the Constitution, getting all of these things that are non-compliant back in conformance, get the federal government into conformance with the Constitution. So let me just kind of dive forward into these Virginia ratification debates. And so as I do this, I want you to understand that these are probably the meatiest ratification debates we have, because these were, I don't want to say the other debates weren't operated and commanded by great minds, but there were great challenges. Patrick Henry was a formidable force in the anti-federalist in the Virginia ratification debates. George Mason was another. He was actually at the Constitutional Convention. Now, there's nowhere in George Mason's assertions that would make anything contrary to a very limited government. He just felt that a Bill of Rights was necessary. And he kept on selling this bill. He went to the grave, until the Bill of Rights was actually created. I mean, he just continued to pound and pound and pound. We need a Bill of Rights. We need a Bill of Rights. And I believe that the argument that they didn't need a Bill of Rights, that they moved forward without a Bill of Rights, actually supported the concept of a limited and enumerated constitution. Now, so I'm going to start off with the top quote, and the top quote that we have is by, of course, James Madison. I've used this before. I use this a lot. The powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects. In other words, it can't legislate on anything that's not defined, beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction, whether that be congressional jurisdiction, federal court jurisdiction, presidential jurisdiction. They are limited to these objects. Now, Mr. Lee of Westmoreland comes out and says this: I say that this new system shows in stronger terms than words can declare that the liberties of the people are secure. It goes on the principle that all power is in the people. So he's kind of echoing what Mr. Wilson was saying in the Pennsylvania debates, that all power is in the people and that rulers have no powers but what are enumerated in that paper. When a question arises with respect to the legality of any power exercised or assumed by Congress, it is plain on the side of the governed. It is enumerated, or actually the question is it enumerated? If it be, it is legal and just. It is otherwise arbitrary and unconstitutional. Candor must confess that it is indefinitely more attentive to the liberties of the people than any state government, because in many of the state governments, most of those state governments were established
with general powers. And as a matter of fact, none of the state governments had nugatories or Bill of Rights, or actually, I think Virginia was the only one. There may have been another one, but most all of the states did not have Bill of Rights. They did not preserve their the rights of the people at the state level. And so let me move on. And I'm going to drag this frog in my throat with me as we move forward. And this one right here is Mr. Lee of Westmoreland as well. The powers reserved to the people were but an inconsiderable exception from what were given to the rulers, but that in the federal government, the rulers of the people were vested with certain defined powers, and what were not delegated to those rulers were retained by the people. The consequence of this, he said, was the limited powers were only an exception to those which rested in the people, and that they knew what they had given up, and it could be in no danger. He exemplified the proposition in a familiar manner. He observed that if a man delegated certain powers to an agent, it would be an insult upon common sense to suppose that that agent could legally transact any business for his principal, which was not contained in the commission whereby the powers were delegated. He's going down the very same vein as Mr. Iredell, but he's not. I like Mr. Iredell better. I just like the way he put it in context to a power of attorney. But anyway, but that if a man empowered his representative or agent to transact all his business except certain enumerated parts, the clear result was that the agent could lawfully transact every possible part of his principal's business except the enumerated parts, and added that these plain propositions were sufficient to demonstrate the inutility and folly, where he permitted to the use of the expression of the Bill of Rights. And so he's basically pointing out that there are falsifications that were coming forth on that the Bill of Rights were needed because they could go well outside these bounds. And he used this business empowerment in entitling somebody to be able to, you know, do something with general powers and then enumerating powers that they couldn't do. Well, that's why you need a Bill of Rights. But in this case, they've been given very specific enumerated powers, and all other powers are retained. That is one of the reasons why, because it wasn't clearly stated that all powers not delegated were retained, that's why the 9th and 10th Amendments were demanded unanimously amongst all the states. So anyway, the next one is Mr. George Nicholas. And so this one by Mr. Lee of Westmoreland, I think was a very good argument in defining and delegating the powers and the lack of a need for a Bill of Rights and so forth. You got to understand that it wasn't that the people were the anti-federalists were really poking big holes at the Constitution. They were just demanding that they created a Bill of Rights. And I think this was a facade by Henry, not necessarily by George Mason. Henry wanted to basically hold off, and he wanted to convene another convention because his design was to actually neuter or tear apart this new Constitution and restore the Articles of Confederation so that the states controlled or had all the controls and vested very little power in the general government. And there were intents. And that's one of the reasons why, as soon as Congress convened in, 1789, the first state that actually called for an Article 5 convention was New York, and then it was followed up by Virginia. They wanted to tear apart or at least put big holes in this Constitution so that the federal government was going to be inept again and unable to do what it needed to do for the general welfare and defense of the Republic. Now, there was no intent for them to actually provide welfare. It was just making sure that the federal government was protecting the external interests, because the federal government was external facing. They did not have any powers over domestic issues. Nowhere in these enumerated powers will you find
a vestment of power that gives them authority to regulate healthcare, to regulate energy, to regulate any of these matters that are, you know, highly domestic. And those things that are of foreign exchange, commerce exchange, those types of things going outward with the world and things coming back in, importing and so forth, that's where the federal government came in, to make sure that the overall benefit of the republic was being maintained by the general government, and so that the general government stayed within those confines that this republic was going to grow exponentially and become more and more of an economic force. And that's exactly what happened. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you very much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. I would love to see somebody do the research on going through the ratification debates and actually kind of put this all into a statistical table. And, you know, how many times were the Federalists qualifying and defining the enumerated powers, that the federal government was limited to those, boom, 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 and how many times in each of the different debates and so forth. And the reason I'd like to see this is because then you can actually, it's almost like a score sheet. It's almost like a piece of music, because you'll be able to actually see where all the harmony was in context to all of these different issues. And where some states weren't even concerned with the militia, weren't concerned with this or that, but they were very concerned about these things. But across the board, in every single issue, they were harmonious to the hard limitations that all federal enforcement was to be done by the militia and so forth. So anyway, maybe someday somebody will do that. That way somebody can actually come right across and just say, there is no conflict within these ratification debates. The only conflict was from the anti-federalists, who were claiming and asserting a bunch of wild, crazy assertions that, you know, the federal government was going to be given these powers. You got to remember that in the fact of the ratifying and accepting the contract as described by the Federalists, those were the definitions, that were accepted. They rejected the assertions of the anti-federalists. That's why they carry no weight. So anyway, Mr. Nicholas goes and says, quote, "This dreaded clause runs in the following words: to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. The committee will perceive that the Constitution had enumerated all the powers which the general government should have, but did not say how they were to be exercised. It, therefore, in this clause, tells how they should be exercised. Because does this give any new power? I say not. Suppose it had been inserted at the end of every power, that they should have the power necessary to carry, or necessary, or, let me do this right, that they shall have power to make laws to carry that power into execution. Would this have increased their powers? If, therefore, it could not have increased their powers if placed at the end of each power, it cannot increase them at the end of all. This clause only enables them to carry into execution the powers given to them, but gives them no additional powers." This is one of the many arguments against the Necessary and Proper Clause. And so George Nicholas then goes on, and this is a little bit about the Bill of Rights. "But it is objected for want of a Bill of Rights. It is a principle universally agreed upon that all powers not given are retained, whereby the Constitution, the general government, has general powers for any purpose. Its powers are absolute. Where it has powers, with some exceptions, they are absolute only as to those exceptions. In either case, the people retain what is not conferred on the general government, as it is by their positive grant that it has any of its powers. In England, all disputes between the king and the people, recurrence is had the enumerated rights of the people to determine, are the rights disputed secured? Are they included in the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, and etc.? If not, they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative. In disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it." And so that's why they, once again, he took a different approach in talking about the general rights and the nugatories, and or the enumerated rights and, you know, everything else retained. This was, I want to say it was a very profound change in governing, because, as, again, most governments prior to this all had general powers. This was like the first time a constitution was drawn out and said, we're only going to give you these powers, and that's it. And so the next statement is by George Nicholas again. "But, sir, this Constitution is defective because the common law is not declared to be in force. What would have been the consequence if it had?" Now, the fact is, most people don't recognize this. And I have to point this out to some people when they want to talk, you know, oh, common law. This is, you know, the common law is the constitutional law of the land. No, it's not. The Constitution left it to the states to decide whether they wanted to utilize common law or civil law. And that's why Louisiana actually practices civil law. Anyway, let me move on. "What would happen if the consequence, if it had, if the Constitution dictated that every state was to use common law? It would be immutable. But now it can be changed or modified as the legislative bodies," and he's talking about the states, "may find necessary for the community, but the common law is not excluded. There is nothing in that paper to warrant the assertion." In other words, it nowhere in there does it say you can't use common law. It just doesn't dictate that you have to use it. "As to the exclusion of a jury from the vicinage, he has mistaken the fact. The legislator may direct by a jury to come from the vicinage, and which is the local vicinity. But the gentleman says that by this constitution, they have no power to make laws to define crimes and prescribe punishments. And that is true. The federal government cannot make laws and or define crimes and prescribe punishments. And that consequently, we are not free from torture. Now, see, they're kind of reversing this. Treason against the United States is defined in the Constitution, and the forfeiture limited to the life of the person attained. Congress have power to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high sea and offenses against the laws of nations. There's your four crimes that Congress has power over. But they cannot define or prescribe the punishment of any other crime whatever. Did you understand what he just said? But they cannot define or prescribe the punishment of any other crime whatever without violating the Constitution. Is that not a gold statement? That's a gold statement. That goes in for gold. If we had no security against torture but our Declaration of Rights, we might be tortured tomorrow, for it has been repeatedly infringed and disregarded. A Bill of Rights is only an acknowledgement to the pre-existing claim to rights of the people. They belong to us as much as if they had been inserted in the Constitution. But it is said that if it be doubtful, the possibility of dispute ought to be precluded. Excuse me. Admitting it was proper for the convention to have inserted a Bill of Rights, it is not proper here to propose it as the condition of our accession to the Union. In other words, joining the Union. And here he's laying it out, and he's actually telling you folks that the anti-federalists were trying to make and stipulate, we will not accept this Constitution without a Bill of Rights, because they knew they couldn't do that. That's what was going to get them into Henry's direction of not ratifying the Constitution and keeping this new union at bay. And he goes on and says, would you reject this government for its omission, dissolve the union, and bring miseries on yourselves and posterity? I hope the gentleman does not oppose it on the ground solely. Is there another reason? He said it is not only the general wish of the state, but all the states to have a Bill of Rights. If it be so, where is the difficulty of having this done by way of the subsequent amendment? We shall find the other states willing to accord with their own favorite wish. The gentleman last up says the power of legislation includes everything. A general power of legislation does, but this is a special power of legislation. Therefore, it does not contain the plenitude of power which he imagines. They cannot legislate in any case but those particularly enumerated. That's another piece of gold right there. Because what he says is, the gentleman last up says the power of legislation includes everything. And so this was actually argued by Ralph Epperson when I was on Patriot Soapbox with him. And he says, oh, because of subsection 17 of Article 1, Section 8, he says that they have exclusive legislative powers, so only in the District of Columbia. And this actually goes down this argument that they can only legislate for the Constitution and for the Republic within the enumerated powers. And he says, the gentleman last up says that the power of legislation includes everything. A general power of legislation does, but this is a special power of legislation. Therefore, it does not contain that plenitude of power which he imagines. They cannot legislate in any case but those particularly enumerated. No gentleman who is a friend to the government ought to withhold his assent from it for this reason. And so he moves on, and I believe that we get Mr. Pendleton coming up next. And so when we come back, we will have Mr. Pendleton arguing regarding the Constitution in these Virginia ratification debates. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so how can you comply with a contract if you don't know what the definitions and terms of the contract are? If all of a sudden you give your subcontractor full latitude to do whatever it is they want to do, they will run your schedule and your budget, you know, into the next world. And that's exactly what's been happening, especially on the budget side. And if you look at the scope and the growth that they have taken, I mean, this goes right down to the fact that if you give anybody an inch, they'll take a mile. And that's exactly what the federal government has been doing. They weren't given any inch technically by definition of the contract. They have assumed, they have convinced and hoodwinked you and I and actually our forefathers that they can do this. Don't worry, we can do anything necessary and proper. We're supreme in all things. They perverted these definitions, and that's why these definitions are so important. If we're going to obtain compliance, we have to understand the terms of the contract, period. So Mr. Pendleton, he's the next one that chimes in these extracts that I have. And Mr. Pendleton says this: Mr. Chairman, this clause does not give Congress power to impede the operation of any part of the Constitution or to make any regulation that may affect the interests of the citizens of the Union at large. But it gives them the power over the local police of the place so that it can be secured from any interruption in their proceedings. Now, he's talking about the local police, the District of Columbia. Notwithstanding the violent attack upon it, I believe, sir, this is the fair construction of this clause. It gives them power of exclusive legislation in any case within that district. Again, talking about Washington, D.C. What is the meaning of this? What is it supposed to? Or what is it opposed to? It is opposed to the general powers of the federal legislature or to those of the state legislatures? He's asking a question. Are these opposed to the powers of the state legislatures? I understand it as opposed to the legislative power of the state where it shall be,
What then is the power? It is that Congress shall exclusively legislate there in order to serve the police of the place and their own personal independence, that they may not be overawed or insulted, and of course to preserve them in opposition to any attempt by the state where it shall be. This is the fair construction. Can we suppose that in order to effect these salutary ends, Congress will make it an asylum for villains and the vilest characters from all parts of the world? Well, actually, that's what's happened, right, folks? Will it not degrade their own dignity to make it a sanctuary for villains? Look at what Obama and the Clintons have done. I hope that no man will ever compose that Congress will associate with the most profligate characters. Now, what is profligate? What does that mean? Wasteful, reckless, spendthrift, squandering, decadent. So profligate characters is not a very good thing. I want to take an aside real quick. I actually worked at the Pentagon in the mid-80s when Reagan was president. I was able to, because I actually worked nights. I went to work at, I think, 7 at night, and I left work at 7 in the morning. So I had the full grave shift, or whatever you want to call it. And because I was working nights, it was just easy to be up all night. So I would be up on my days off with nothing to do. And so what I did was I used to walk around the streets of D.C. and taking pictures at the monuments and so forth. And I'm here to tell you that you could safely walk anywhere in D.C. practically in the mid-80s and not have any worries or have any concerns regarding your safety. And I had very expensive camera equipment with me. Fact of the matter is, nobody bothered me, and, you know, it was a respectful place. It only took 4 years after Reagan, when Clinton took office, because I went back to D.C. several times while I was in the Marine Corps, all the way up until when I retired, and that was towards the end of Clinton's administration, and you could see how the character of Washington, D.C., was brought down. It was debased. What you could tell that those people in Washington, D.C. were of the entitlement age and of the mind model that they were, they could do anything. I mean, gunshots and crime was absolutely on the rise. What happened? Well, this all lends to what I started this whole show off. You cannot debase society and not have consequences. Property damage goes up, crime goes up. People just, they don't have any morals, and they don't have any consideration towards your rights or anything else. Now, let me move forward here, and let me actually take this. This next statement is actually by George Mason, and keep in mind, he is an anti-federalist. Mr. George Mason, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen say there is no new power given by this clause. Is there anything in this Constitution which secures to the states the powers which are said to be retained? Will powers remain to the states which are not expressly guarded and reserved? I will suppose a case. Gentlemen may call it an impossible case, and suppose that Congress will act with wisdom and integrity. Among the enumerated powers, Congress are to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, and pay the debts, and to provide for the general welfare and common defense. And by that clause, so often called the sweeping clause, that they are to make laws necessary to execute those laws. Now suppose oppression should arise under this government, and any writer should dare to stand forth and expose to the community at large the abuses of those powers. Could not Congress, under the idea of providing for the general welfare and under their own construction, say that this was destroying the general peace, encouraging sedition, and poisoning the minds of the people? And could they not, in order to provide against this, lay a dangerous restriction on the press? might not then even bring the trial of restriction within 10 miles square when there is no prohibition against it? Might they not thus destroy the trial by jury? Would they not extend their implication? It appears to me that they may and will and shall, the support of our rights dependent on the bounty of these men, excuse me, whose interest it may be to oppress us, that Congress should have power to provide for the general welfare of the Union. I grant, but I wish a clause in the Constitution with respect to all powers which are not granted, that they are retained by the states. Otherwise, the power of providing for the general welfare may be perverted to its destruction. And so there you go. That was Mason actually bringing in what we now know as the 10th Amendment. And actually, even the 9th Amendment kind of falls within this as well. Mr. Nicholas is up next, and I think I got enough time to do this one. In reply to the gentleman opposed to the clause under debate, went over the same grounds and developed the same principles which Mr. Pendleton and Mr. Madison had done. The opposers of the clause, which gave the power of providing for the general welfare, supposed its dangers to result from its connection with an extension of the powers granted in the other clauses. He endeavored to show the committee that it only empowered Congress to make such laws as would be necessary to enable them to pay the public debts and provide for the common defense, that this general welfare was united not to the general power of legislation, but to the particular power of laying and collecting taxes, imposts, and excises for the purpose of paying debts and providing for the common defense. There you go, my friends. This is where he's actually laying out this argument of, remember, there's these four clauses, the general welfare and defense, there's the commerce clause, the supremacy clause, and the necessary and proper. This right here lays waste of any type of concepts that the general welfare clause could be applied to anything. And he goes on and says, that is, that they could raise as much money as would pay the debts and provide for the common defense in consequence of this power. The clause which was affected, called the sweeping clause, which is at the end, the necessary and proper clause, contained no new grant of power. To illustrate this position, he observed that if it had not been added at the end of every one of the enumerated powers, instead of being inserted at the end of all, it would be obvious to anyone that it was no augmentation of power. If, for instance, at the end of the clause granting power to lay and collect taxes, it had been added that they should have power to make necessary and proper laws to lay and collect taxes, who could suspect it would be an addition of power? As it would grant no new power if inserted at the end of each clause, it could not be subjoined to the whole. There was a lot of arguing and a lot of debate over that necessary and proper clause because they thought that that was a huge portal. They also thought that that exclusivity clause of being able to have exclusive legislation, excuse me, was actually applicable to everything, and they just failed to read beyond that because it says right there in the seat of government or in that local vicinity. We'll get into that tomorrow with more Virginia ratification debates. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.